Session 882, September 26, 1979. Chapter 1, Before the Beginning. From Dreams, Evolution, and Value Fulfillment, Volume 1. Whispering. Good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, now. Long pause, one of many notes, Rob. Seth, the universe will begin yesterday. The universe began tomorrow. Both of these statements are quite meaningless. The tenses are wrong, and perhaps your time sense is completely outraged. Yet the statement, the universe began in some distant past, is, in basic terms, just as meaningless. In fact, the first two statements, while making no logical sense, do indeed hint of phenomenon that show time itself to be no more than a creative construct. Time and space are, in a fashion, part of the furniture of your universe. The very experience of passing moments belongs to your psychological rooms in the same way that clocks are attached to your walls. Whenever science or religion seeks the origin of the universe, they search for it in the past. The universe is being created now. Creation occurs in each moment, in your terms. The illusion of time itself is being created now. It is therefore somewhat futile to look for the origins of the universe by using a time scheme that is in itself, at the very least, highly relative. Your now, or present moment, is a psychological platform. It seems that the universe began with an initial burst of energy of some kind. Rob notes the Big Bang. Seth continues, evolutionists cannot account for its cause. Many religious people believe that a God exists in a larger dimension of reality and that he created the universe while being himself outside of it. He set it into motion. Many individuals following either persuasion believe that, regardless of its source, the universe must run out of energy. Established science is quite certain that no energy can now be created or destroyed, but only transformed. Rob notes, as stated in the first law of thermodynamics. Seth, science sees energy and matter as being basically the same thing, appearing differently under varying circumstances. In certain terms, science and religion are both dealing with the idea of an objectively created universe. Either God made it, or physical matter in some unexplained manner was formed into an initial explosion of energy, and consciousness emerged from that initially dead matter in a way yet to be explained. Instead, consciousness formed matter. As I have said before, each atom and molecule has its own consciousness. Consciousness and matter and energy are one, but consciousness initiates the transformation of energy into matter. In those terms, the beginning of our universe was a triumph in the expansion of consciousness, as it learned to translate itself into physical form. The universe emerged, and actually in the same way, to a very different degree, that any idea emerges from what you think of as subjectivity into physical expression. The consciousness of each reader of this book existed before the universe was formed, in your terms. But that consciousness was unmanifest. Your closest approximation, and it is an approximation only, of the state of being that existed before the universe was formed is the dream state. In that state, before the beginning, your consciousness existed free of space and time, aware of immense probabilities. This is extremely difficult to verbalize, yet it is very important that such an attempt be made. Your consciousness is a part of an infinitely original creative process. I will purposefully avoid using the word God because of the connotations placed upon it by conventional religion. I will make an attempt to explain the characteristics of this divine process throughout this book. I call the process All That Is. All that is so much a part of its creation that it is almost impossible to separate the creator from the creations. For each creation also carries indelibly within it the characteristics of its source. If you have thought that the universe followed a mechanistic model, then you would have to say that each portion of this cosmic machine created itself, knowing its position in the entire future construction. You would have to say further that each portion came gladly out of its own source individually, neatly tailored to its position, while at the same time that individual source was also as intimately the source of each other individual portion. I am not saying that the universe is the result of some psychological machine, either, but that each portion of consciousness is a part of all that is, and that the universe falls together in a spontaneous, divine order, and that each portion of consciousness carries within it indelibly the knowledge of the whole. The birth of the world represented a divine psychological awakening. Each consciousness that takes a part in the physical universe dreamed of such a physical existence in your terms before the earth was formed. In greater terms than yours, it is quite true to say that the universe is not formed yet, or that the universe has vanished. In still vaster terms, however, the fact is that in one state or another, the universe has always existed. Your closest approximation of the purpose of the universe can be found in those loving emotions that you have toward the development of your children, in your intent to have them develop their fullest capacities. Your finest aspirations can give you some dim clue as to the great creative thrust that is behind your own smallest act. For your own smallest act is possible only because your body has already been provided for in the physical world. Your life is given. In each moment it is renewed. So smoothly and effortlessly do you ride that thrust of life's energy that you are sometimes scarcely aware of it. You are not equipped with a certain amount of energy that then wears out and dies. Instead, you are again newly created in each moment. That is enough for now. End of session and a fond good evening. Rob, thank you, Seth. Good night. Session 883, October 1, 1979. Chapter 1, Before the Beginning, Dreams, Evolution, and Value Fulfillment in Volume 1. Whispering. Seth, good evening. Rob, good evening, Seth. Seth, dictation. The heading of the chapter, I forgot to give it to you, is Before the Beginning. Now, you cannot prove scientifically that your world was created by a god who set it into motion but remained outside of its dominion. Nor can you prove scientifically that the creation of the world was the result of a chance occurrence. So you will not be able to prove what I am going to tell you either, not in usual terms. I hope, however, to present, along with my explanations, certain hints and clues that will show you where to look for subjective evidence, period. You live your lives through your own subjective knowing, to begin with, and I will try to arouse within your own consciousnesses memories of events with which your own inner psyches were intimately involved as the world was formed, and though these may appear to be past events, they are even now occurring. Before the beginning of the universe, we will postulate the existence of an omnipotent creative source. We will hope to show that this divine subjectivity is as present in the world of your experience as it was before the beginning of the universe. Again, I refer to this original subjectivity as all that is. I am making an attempt to verbalize concepts that almost defy the edges of the intellect, unless that intellect is thoroughly reinforced by the intuition's strength. So you will need to use your mind and your own intuitions as you read this book. All that is, before the beginning, contained within itself the infinite thrust of all possible creations. All that is possessed a creativity of such magnificence that its slightest imaginings, dreams, thoughts, feelings, or moods attained a kind of reality, a vividness, an intensity, that almost demanded freedom. Freedom from what? Freedom to do what? Freedom to be what? The experience, the subjective universe, the mind, of all that is was so brilliant, so distinct, that all that is almost became lost, mentally wandering within this ever-flourishing, ever-growing interior landscape. Each thought, feeling, dream, or mood was itself indelibly marked with all the attributes of this infinite subjectivity. Each glowed and quivered with its own creativity, its own desire to create as it had been created. Before the beginning, there existed an internal universe that had no beginning or ending, for I am using the term before the beginning to make matters easier for you to assimilate. In parentheses, note that same infinite interior universe exists now, for example. All that is contained within itself, the knowledge of all existences, with their infinite probabilities, and as soon as all that is imagined those numberless circumstances, they existed in what I will call divine fact. All that is knew of itself only. It was engrossed with its own subjective experiences, even divinely astonished, as its own thoughts and imaginings attained their own vitality and inherited the creativity of their subjective creator. Those thoughts and imaginings began to have a dialogue with their maker. Thoughts and such magnificent vigor began to think their own thoughts, and their thoughts, thoughts, thoughts. As if in divine astonishment and surprise, all that is began to listen, and began to respond to these generations of thoughts and dreams, for the thoughts and dreams related to each other also. There was no time, so all of this was happening simultaneously. The order of events is being simplified. In the meantime, then, in your terms, all that is spontaneously thought new thoughts and dreamed new dreams and became involved in new imaginings. And all of these also related to those now infinite generations of interweaving and interrelating thoughts and dreams that already existed. So beside this spontaneous creation, this simultaneous stream of divine rousings, all that is began to watch the interactions that occurred among his own subjective progeny. He listened, began to respond and to answer a thought or a dream. He began to purposefully bring about those mental conditions that were requested by these generations of mental progeny. If he had been lonely before, he was no longer. Your language causes some difficulty here, so please accept the pronoun he as innocuously as possible. It sounds too neutral for my purpose, and I want to reserve the pronoun she for some later differentiations. In basic terms, of course, all that is quite beyond any designations having to do with any one species or sex. All that is, then, began to feel a growing sense of pressure as it realized that its own ever-multiplying thoughts and dreams themselves yearned to enjoy those greater gifts of creativity with which they were innately endowed. It is very difficult to try to assign anything like human motivation to all that is. I can only say that it is possessed by the need to lovingly create from its own being, to lovingly transform its own reality in such a way that each most slight probable consciousness can come to be, and with the need to see that any and all possible orchestrations of consciousness have the chance to emerge, to perceive, and to love. We will later discuss the fuller connotations of the word love as it is meant here, but this chapter is a kind of outline of other material to come. All that is, then, became aware of a kind of creative tumult as each of its superlative thoughts and dreams, moods and feelings strained at the very edges of their beings, looking for some then unknown, undiscovered, as of then unthought of release. I am saying that this mental progeny included all of the consciousnesses that have ever appeared or will appear upon your earth, all tenderly couched as the first human being, the first insect, each within an inner knowledge of the possibilities of its development. All that is, loving its own progeny, sought within itself the answer to this divine dilemma. When that answer came, it involved previously unimaginable leaps of divine inspiration, and it occurred thusly. All that is searched through the truly infinite assortment of its incredible progeny to see what conditions were needed for this even more magnificent dream, this dream of a freedom of objectivity. What door could open to let physical reality emerge from such an inner realm? When all that is, in your terms, put all of those conditions together, it saw, of course, in a flash, the mental creation of those objective worlds that would be needed. And as it imagined those worlds, in your terms, they were physically created. All that is did not separate itself from those worlds, however, for they were created from its thoughts, and each one has a divine content. The worlds are all created by that divine content, so that while they are, on the one hand, exterior, they are, on the other, also made of divine stuff, and each hypothetical point in your universe is in all direct contact with all that is in the most basic terms. The knowledge of the whole is within all of its parts, and yet all that is more than its parts. Divine subjectivity is indeed infinite. It can never be entirely objectified. When the worlds, yours and others, were thus created, there was indeed an explosion of unimaginable proportions as the divine spark of inspiration exploded into objectivity. The first object was an almost unendurable mass, though it had no weight, and it exploded, instantaneously beginning processes that formed the universe. But no time was involved. The process that you might imagine took up aeons occurred in the twinkling of an eye. And the initial objective materialization of the massive thought of all that is burst into reality. In your terms, this was a physical explosion. But in the terms of the consciousnesses involved in that breakthrough, this was experienced as a triumphant first inspirational frenzy, a breakthrough into another kind of being. The earth then appeared as consciousness transformed itself into the many facets of nature. The atoms and molecules were alive, aware. They were no longer simply a part of a divine syntax, but they spoke themselves through the very nature of their being. They became the living, aware vowels and syllables through which consciousness could form matter. But in your terms, this was still largely a dream world, though it was fully fashioned. It had, generally speaking, all of the species that you know now. These all correlated with the multitudinous kinds of consciousnesses that had clamored for release, and those consciousnesses were spontaneously endowed by all that is with those forms that fit their requirement. You had the birth of individualized consciousness, as you think of it, into physical context. Those consciousnesses were individualized before the beginning, but not manifest. But individualized consciousness was not quite all that bold. It did not attach itself completely to its earthly forms at the start, but rested often within its ancient divine heritage. In your terms, it is as if the earth and all its creatures were partially dreaming, and not as focused within physical reality as they are now. For one thing, while individualized consciousness was within the massive subjectivity of all that is, it enjoyed, besides its own uniqueness, a feeling of supporting unity, a comforting knowledge that it was one with its source. So in the beginning of your world, consciousness fluctuated greatly, focusing gently at the start, but not quite as willing to be as fully independent as its first intent might seem. You had the sleepwalkers, early members of your species, whose main concentration was still veiled in that earlier subjectivity, and they were your true ancestors in those terms. Are you tired, Rob? I'm okay. Seth. For one thing, early man needed to rely upon his great inner knowledge. Take your break. Rob notes, Seth's call for a break was abrupt. Is one of the cats out? Jane asked right away, looking around. Billy, our 8-month-old tiger cat, was sleeping on a chair near us. A couple of minutes ago, he'd started making some odd, high-pitched sounds I hadn't heard him produce before. I'd wondered if those sounds might bother Jane in trance, and they had. I didn't know where Billy's litter mate Mitzi was, though. I found her locked out on the screened-in front porch. "I don't want to lose it," Jane said. She went quickly back into trance. Purring and rubbing, Mitzi began to climb all over me as I tried to take notes. Seth, all of the species began by emphasizing a great subjective orientation that was most necessary as they learned to manipulate within the new physical environment. End of session. Jane paused, eyes closed. Mitzi was still loving me up. 10:31. Oh, I said in some surprise. I'll tell you, Jane said. I was getting more. It was fun to do, and I knew what was coming, but going back like that, I couldn't get it. I told Jane the session was brilliant, the best she'd ever given. I told her it raised many questions, but that I didn't think any more. At any time, had dealt better with the origin of the universe, our world, our history. I got some of it before the session, about the initial ones before the Earth was formed. You could call them non-physical entities, but it sounds dumb when you say it now. Physical entities couldn't hold all that much consciousness. I didn't know it was that definite until the end of the session, though. Boy, that was a really good state, she said with satisfaction. I really enjoyed it. But I had to admit that I was also surprised. Seth had come through so rapidly and emphatically that while taking notes, I'd hardly had time to think about questions. What's he trying to do? I asked Jane. Combine something like science's theoretical Big Bang origin of the universe, all of those billions of years ago, with creationist theory of a recent spontaneous divine creation of that same universe? Has our Earth and all of its creatures evolved or not? Could you have simultaneous evolution? Here we go again, I speculated, back to struggling with that contradictory notion of simultaneous time, notes Rob. How does Seth's instantaneous beginning processes that formed the universe, with no time involved, square with fossils in the Earth? Isn't he saying that the universe grew, evolved through a series of dream states? I told Jane that as far as I know, the unimaginable explosion of the primordial superdense state or entity that resulted in the formation of our universe had been a straightforward event. Once begun, it kept going. There hadn't been any fluctuations or on-off states balancing between the physical and non-physical, for example. Science currently postulates this theory as its standard model for the creation of the universe. So how do Seth's own ideas of probable universes and probable Earths fit in with his material tonight, as I am sure they do? I quickly saw that my questions could go on and on. Seth's book is young, I told myself. Wait, wait. And Mitzi, her affectionate display long finished, had jumped down from my lap and disappeared as Jane and I talked. Section 884, October 3, 1979. Dreams, Evolution, and Value Fulfillment. Now, Seth, let us return to our tale or origins. We are sitting here on a specific autumn evening. I am obviously dictating this book, speaking through Rupert, while Joseph sits on the couch across from a very specific coffee table, taking down my words. This is the year 1979, and the idea of time and of dates seems to be indelibly mixed into everyone's psychology. You can remember last year and to some extent recall the past years of your lives. It appears to you that your present consciousness wanders backward into the past until finally you can remember no longer. And on a conscious level, at least, you must take the very event of your birth under second-handed evidence. Few people have conscious memory of it. For the purposes of our discussion, I must necessarily couch this book to some degree in the framework of time. I must honor your specifics, otherwise you would not understand what I am trying to say. Even though this book is being dictated within time's tradition, therefore I must remind you that basically the tradition is not mine, and more, basically, it is not yours either.
I use the term before the beginning, then, as I speak of Earth's events in certain sequences. In the deepest of terms, however, and in ways that quite scandalize the intellect when it tries to operate alone, the beginning is now. That critical explosion of divine subjectivity into objectivity is always happening, and you are being given life in each moment because of the simultaneous nature of that divine subjectivity. We will nevertheless call our next chapter In the Beginning, laying certain events out for you in serial form. I hope that in other portions of this book, certain mental exercises will allow you to leap over the tradition of time's framework and sense with the united intellect and intuitions your own individual part in a spacious present that is large enough to contain all of time's segments.